Hello and welcome to the Hockey Hurts podcast for November 5th of 2023. I'm Ryan Wilson, Penguins writer for HockeyBuzz.com.
I'm Cameron Walsh from HockeyHits.com.
It's been a long time since a mob of Penguins went into the Bay Area and massacred some sharks. This was this brought me back to childhood when Mario Lemieux used to put up 7 points on the Sharks back in the early 90s. And I would watch SportsCenter in the morning. I would memorize where the Penguins highlight was. And I would watch that same highlight package about four times. Those Shark games were really something else. And last night, 10-2, Pittsburgh over San Jose in a much-needed win for the Penguins, who had been spinning their tires for a little bit early on in the year. And, gosh, I don't even know what the fallout for a loss would have looked like, but we don't have to worry about that. They crushed the Sharks last night.
Yeah, it was fun to watch. They looked like they enjoyed themselves out there, and maybe that's what the team needed. It was a game where it was like a proper training run, really. I said this to you before we started. I didn't think teams in this era could be this bad, but here we are.
They're going to make a run for it as far as some of those Coyotes teams, the Buffalo team that tanked for McDavid/Eichel. This team, especially if like Logan Couture or Tomas Hertl like have enough, because I think Mike Greer had as an open... Like, told them, if you want to be moved, just let me know.
And,
if the guys like that go, there's just not a lot there.
There's being bad, and then there's being damagingly bad, if that makes sense. Like,
And there's no guarantee for them to, like, have it pay off.
Rob Rossi put up a good tweet about that after the Sharks game, which was literally, you had Fleury, Malcolm, Crosby, Stahl all came through 4 years in a row. What's the guarantee that that's what? There's no guarantee that you're going to get a run like that.
Well, even if you have those like number one, number two overall picks, it's still not a guarantee what you have waiting for you there. And that's, trust me, I have no idea what next year's like draft looks like. I haven't even given it a thought. But let's say there was a McDavid or something. They could be the worst team by 40 points and still not pick in the top three, given the new lottery system. It wouldn't be likely, or maybe I'm wrong, that they couldn't fall out of the top three. But they're certainly not guaranteed the number one overall pick, even though they're that bad. So, it's a bad hockey club, and I found myself – I watched the Sharks broadcast last night just because it was – I like to change it up once in a while, and theirs is pretty decent. I feel bad for those guys. They're going to be – like the way to fill time, like they were critical enough, but they're so bad that they can't do that like nightly and just go in on them.
You're going to have to highlight the other team.
They kind of were.
Yeah, otherwise, you're not going to have a job at the end of the year.
So, I was just listening and taking in how they were saying things, and it's a tough place to be for them, and I don't envy it one bit. So
no, because it's still Randy Hahn and Drew Remender, right?
Yeah.
Are they professionals? They're good at what they do, those guys, so... You'd hope they'd get through the 82 games. I mean, it would be brutal to watch it. I remember what it's like.
I thought they were good, all things considered. Enough about the Sharks and their announcing crew. How about them Pittsburgh Penguins, 10-2?
Yeah, it was nice to watch. Like they looked like they knew what they were doing, as opposed to some of the games this year early where it was like, what is going on? And I don't know if there's a non-Sharks-related factor here, but the roster was slightly different for this game as well.
Yeah. Well, they put P. Pierre-Olivier Joseph back in, but I don't think that's what you're alluding to.
No? Oh, you caught me out.
Jeff Carter was a healthy scratch for the first time this year, and the fourth line scored twice. What a – wow, how about that? Now, the problem with this game is it was 10-2 against a team that lost 10-1 the last game they played. So
yeah,
it's one of those situations where you don't want to overdo it, because this seems like preseason hype kind of stuff where, Drew O'Connor might get 20 goals because his preseason was really good, and here he is sitting on zero goals, and I can't imagine many points.
No.
Not that he's playing awful, but you know what I mean? Like, you can't, like, over... This is just one game against a bad team, but what I am going to say is the line looked a lot more functional. Vinny Hinostroza came in for him, and he did score. It was a very weird goal. I wouldn't rely on the sustainability of scoring goals like that.
That was odd.
However, when you watch Hinostroza play, he can skate, something Jeff Carter just cannot do anymore. And Jeff Carter's hands aren't functioning the way that they used to. So he struggles to create time and space. And now if he does get time and space, he still isn't making plays because his hands are cooked or his decision-making, I don't know what it is. He's not the same player than even when he arrived in Pittsburgh. I think it's pretty clear that he's not one of the best 12 forwards. I'm glad Mike Sullivan finally realized that. It took him 9 games to do it. But I saw a few times last night Hinostroza filling in for, like, if somebody pinched in, he filled back. And his skating, he's able to do those kinds of things that are, you know, not the most noticeable, but he's working hard. He's just going place to place where he should be. You know, that's where my bar is for a fourth line player, and he did it.
Yeah, but the fourth line needs to not get caved in. Like, you know, we've said that for this season. It's like the top two pairings on D and the top six forwards are going to carry the majority of the work. But in games like this where you do get some scores from the bottom four, the bottom six and the bottom pairing, it's like, right, you don't have to play Letang, Carlson, Crosby, Melk, like all those minutes. Like, the guys that they need to have not play many minutes shouldn't play many minutes. That said, Letang still did hit 23 minutes.
Last night?
Yeah.
You know, shame on me, because I do love Chris Letang. I haven't really paid as much attention to him because I'm just so caught up with the Carlson stuff.
Agree. Totally agree.
Because it's new.
You're also going to see less of him anyway in the moments where he can do stuff, because Carlson's running that power play. Right? That's usually where you see Letang, because it goes through the point. So I don't think you go easy on yourself, right?
Yeah. So the fourth line had that change made for at least one game. It looked better. We're going to see really how much better that is on Tuesday when they get their second crack at the Ducks, a little bit of a revenge game. I thought that's a game they should have won last week.
Yes.
Unfortunately, I do think Carter is going to find his way back in against the Kings.
Yeah.
Which is strange because it's going to be their hardest game of the trip. And they're going to put him back in for, you know, reasons.
Reasons.
Because they played there. They won a couple cups.
I don't understand how you can have a team that's struggling as much as it has been. They're below 500. You just want a game to get yourself just to 400, right? You're then going to go play a Ducks team, say you win that. You've got a chance to actually get your nose above water, and you're going to pull at the heartstrings rather than do the right thing.
Well, to be fair to Mike Sullivan, he hasn't done that yet. This is just, I think, both of us, what we think is going to happen.
Mm. Mm. That's historically how it happens with this sport, though.
Absolutely. So I'm expecting it to happen, and I'll be pleasantly surprised if it does not.
Yeah, correct. Correct.
I don't know how you go back. What if the Ford line pops in another two against Anaheim? At that point, I don't think he would.
Yeah, well, yes, correct. I'm saying that. I still
or do something
yes.
weird and like pull Drew O'Connor.
Yeah. That's right. while we're talking about the bottom half of the roster, that bottom pairing terrifies me at the moment when you've got Shea and P.O. Joseph there.
Yeah, I mean, it's so far down on my list right now because they've had just so many other things that they got to get right.
Correct.
Like the bottom pairing is, I think Ryan Shea is finding his way a little bit more. Though it was a little bit cruel last night. I think they awarded him his first career point and then took it away.
That's unfair.
Because Brian Rust set a career high with his fifth point, but I think that was the one they took away. Or he had 4 points this morning on the NHL's website. So whatever point they took away, they took the assist away on something. So...
Nasty.
So that sucks for him. But, you know, he seems to have that spot for right now.
It's interesting because it feels like he's kind of jumped. You know, I know they're playing together at the moment, but if you were to bring Ruedel back into the lineup, it would be for Joseph, not Shea, I think.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think Joseph's probably closer to on his way out than to regaining a regular role at this time.
Mm.
And that's fine. I mean, he's not like awful by any stretch, but I just remember people like penning or penciling him into the top four and being like, oh, I don't know if that's really realistic. And here we are, and he can't even like regularly pin down a bottom pairing role.
With the way the roster changed before the start of the season, I would have been happy to have just be able to pencil him in for a bottom pairing position
and
to
I
be
still
reliable.
Would.
Yeah, it's the reliability part that worries me. It's interesting. There are times for a guy that skates so well, it feels like forecheckers get to him before he's ready. Particularly when he's behind the net, and it's like I don't know what it is that has him that half a step off, but who knows? Maybe it'll click for him, and it'll be fine. But yeah, it looks like he gets rushed, and I'm like, it just seems odd for a guy that I think can skate pretty well. So
yeah, but ain't that the thing with a bottom pairing role? Like consistency is not exactly a thing.
And that's why
otherwise.
They're there. They wouldn't be a bottom pairing defenseman. You make a very good point, right?
But I wouldn't mind moving. Like, if we want to talk like big picture roster, because I think POJ plays into this a little bit. Well, people were upset about the recent stretch of games, which rightfully totally should have been. Talking about like revamping the roster and stuff like this, there's not much that can be done right now, realistically.
Correct.
You hear like I see trade Gensel, which is just absurd to me. That's a non-starter. He's going to get an extension, so I don't know why we're even like, okay, so you trade Jake Gensel, who by the way is tied for the team lead in points, even though it might not feel that way. And then what? It's not going to be a one-for-one. It's going to be a team giving you futures. Well, the Penguins just traded for Erik Karlsson. That's not the team they are right now. They don't want that.
Nope.
You don't make the Karlsson trade if you're going to start pulling. But that's the conundrum that Dubas inherited. They do have really nice top six, top four pieces. But you can't trade from them because there's nothing coming up underneath to backfill it. This isn't like a Jim Rutherford thing where you just trade for the sake of shaking things up kind of deal.
You got no assets left due to that.
Furthermore, it ain't like they're playing bad.
No.
Expected goals-wise, they've been pretty good. Now, they've underperformed that with actual goals, because that's the sport, which has led to some of these losses. But as far as, like, what can you do to make the team better, like, I think you're really left with trading a guy like POJ for the forward version of POJ, which is not a groundbreaking move by any stretch, but, like, that's really what we're looking at.
Yeah.
Unless somehow Jeff Carter gets the writing on the wall after he's healthy scratched a million times, hopefully, and he waives his no movement clause to somebody that's willing to take that salary on, because really it's the Carter contract blocking any kind of movement. I would throw Achari's contract in there too. I would drop him tomorrow. I have no use for a $2 million player with what the output's been, even though the game yesterday looked fine.
It's almost like every general manager has one player like that, that they overvalue something about that player that I obviously can't see across every roster. And you're like, why are you spending that much amount of the cap space on those skill sets? Just that, yeah, you sit there and go, bizarre. And Achari fits that bill.
This is a team where you just go bare minimum on those roles. You just have to.
Well,
that's the way they're structured. Like, you can't be spending $2 million on that. Him and Carter, that's right. $5 million.
Yeah. Well, that's a severe upgrade to your third line center, and Lars can play fourth line center. But that's the difference right there.
So I don't really think there's a lot to be had there other than this team just has to, you know, play better as far as, you know, hitting their expected goals with real ones. And that's a frustrating thing to hear, but I just don't. What are you going to trade Ricard Raquel at a statistical low? What do you think you're going to get back there? He's 30 years old with term and $5 million.
I'm not really. So this is the thing that's funny, is that I'm not particularly worried about.
I'm not worried
his
about
actual
him.
point production. Like, the thing is, I say he goes through one of those years where just shooting percentages are low and all that. You know what I mean? Everything just goes sideways for him statistically. If Malkin and Smith play with him for the whole year and he plays like that, the way they're going, I'm okay with Raquel not really producing as such, because, you know, Malkin's above a point a game and looking like old, not quite old school Gino Machino, but
close as he's
looking
been
like,
in a while.
Correct. That's exactly right. And if the cost of having Smith and Malkin go the way they go is Raquel being a little bit lower, I can probably deal with that as a coach.
He's not lower in his play, though. I did a thing the other day, like,
yep.
His underlying numbers are really good. His expected goals are where they should be. His shooting volume and his shot quality in relation to his previous years, where he's clearly had great years. Otherwise, why would they have traded for him? Like, he was a very good addition to this team, I think.
Yeah.
All that stuff checks out. It's just that Buck's not going in. Now, it's a little weird. The assists are where they are, considering Malkin and Smith are doing their thing. But I could pose this. Flip them with Rust.
Yeah. Yeah.
Part of that article was Raquel plays better with Crosby, and Rust actually plays better with Malkin. Rust plays fine with both, don't get me wrong, but in his sample with Malkin, it's been better, even. And the way Rust is going right now, he looks like he's got that jump in his step again that last year just didn't look like he had it.
No, it was like last year was the year where it's like he deserved the contract, but always this, the downhill slide of that contract making it a terrible contract sort of scenario. And thus far this year, those fears for me have been allayed somewhat at this point.
Yeah, so far so good with Russ. So my part of the solutions to kind of get things going a little bit more, not so much a trade, but little things like that where you try to maximize what you do have. And I think one of those moves could be flipping Raquel and Rust. Would be part of what I would do if I had this, had a say in it. But you know, you spoke to Malkin and Smith. Let me just say, Riley Smith has been awesome, and yeah. I knew he was a very good player, even back Florida when is it Talon?
Yeah.
For the expansion draft, gave Smith and Marchessault to Vegas. I even at the time, like, wow, what a bozo move. But even since then, like the time in Vegas, Marchessault, Conn Smythe, but Riley Smith was great from the get-go there, and I really, really think he thinks the game at a high level, which meshes so well with somebody like Malkin, that when you can combine his puck skills with the way he thinks, and he can skate, it's just a nice... Malkin hasn't had something like this in a long time. Like a super dependable winger like that. That is like the total package of intelligence, skating, and hands. And shooting, for that matter. His goal on the power play last night was awesome. He really picked that corner.
Yes, yes he did.
And the proof is in the pudding. Malkin looks like he has more time and space. And part of that's because Smith creates some of that himself. Where, you know, I thought Jason Zucker had a wonderful season last year, but he's a different kind of player. Not that he didn't have any hands at all, but not the kind of clever, controlled plays that Riley Smith is making. There was a goal last night. I can't remember which one of the 10, but there was a face-off play, and it went to the wall where Smith was, and Riley Smith did a few little clever handles of the puck and manipulated it while some Shark guys were closing in on him. But it's the kind of plays that he kept alive. The puck didn't turn over. It kept the play going. And that sequence, I believe, turned into the goal that Malkin had on the wide back door.
That Smith got to him anyway.
I don't know if Smith made the primary pass, but he'd certainly kept it alive long enough to... He might have made the pass. I can't.
I think I watched the game last night. I sat down and actually got to watch the whole replay all at once. And he did the work on the boards and then made the pass across, and Gino kicked it to his stick.
But those are the type of players I'm talking about. I think Zucker was the type of player that could keep that puck by like just being fierce on it. But I don't know if he could have kept the puck in kind of semi-control to still, you know what
do
I'm saying? Not just
yes,
muscle
yes.
it down to the corner kind of deal, where Smith is has that little extra. And I very much enjoyed watching that sequence, but his overall game. Plus, he can penalty kill. The power play's been better since he's been put on it. I was a little apprehensive at first, considering he's another left-hand shot, but hey, if it's going to keep Crosby on the other side down lower and he can wire the puck like he did on that first goal of the game,
yeah,
and have all the hockey IQ and the passing and the hands, yeah, sign me up for that. That sounds great.
Yeah, I want to see them have a shoot first mentality more though.
Yeah,
they've got all this talent, and they like to pass it around to each other. It's almost like they're deferring to each other, and it's like, guys, just fling it and then put it in with your skills on the rebound.
So you always say. The frustrating thing is they did it against the Ducks early in the game. Carlson had a one-timer bomb. Malkin had a one-timer bomb. Both, I think, were power play goals. Then they get the 5-on-3. They take Smith off the power play. They put Raquel in there. And I know we were just saying how Raquel, you know, the points haven't quite reflected how well he's played. But he stunk on that 5-on-3. He wasn't screening the goalie. He wasn't available in a dangerous area. He was just kind of there, and they just kept playing the perimeter game on a 5-on-3. Just rip the goddamn puck and win the rebounds.
Create your 2-on-1s. It's the whole
you got
point.
Sid down low, who is the biggest bulldog there is. Riley Smith would be something fierce down low himself. And Gensel's somewhere, you know, down there figuring it out, who is underrated as a net front presence. So,
who runs the power play, coaching wise?
I think Reardon, but I can't say for sure. He used to. I know for sure the first time around. The guts of a good power play, I'm starting to see. Which is good.
I agree. Yeah, I agree.
And they went 2-for-4 last night, which, you know, probably boosted them past where they were. Now, the real problem is earlier last week, they were one of the teams that have earned the fewest power plays in the league. They were in the bottom 5. So while the power play didn't look terrific, they really haven't had a ton of opportunity to make it look that good. I'm not trying to make excuses. The talent is too good to look as bad as they have at times.
Yeah.
It's kind of unacceptable. But you got to be careful early in a year where you're only judging a power play based on the goals. And trust me, I get it. Some of these games were flat out lost because the power play couldn't help with some of the goal scoring that wasn't happening in the bottom 6. Because before Radim Zahorna showed up and has done a marvelous job, like, there was no pulse for the bottom 6 scoring. So it was either the top 6 scored at even strength, or that was that. And that is not a recipe to win games, and quite frankly, they weren't. So, and last night, how about this? You know, we laugh about the 10-2 score, but the power play scores a minute and a half in, right?
I can see where you're going.
Tristan Jarry, somebody got in on a mini breakaway in that period when it was 1-0. He makes a very nice save. The play goes back the other way, and it's 2-0. And what are two biggest things that the Penguins have been lacking? A power play goal here and there, and Tristan Jarry making any kind of save in an important moment. And they got both of them early in that period. And let me just say, their expected goals were like 15% that period. They were not playing that well against a crappy Sharks team. Could you imagine if they left that period being down or tied instead of up 2-0? That game really could have had a different shape to it. But you know what? It just goes to show how important it is to get a save and to get some power play goals chipped in, because it really changes the framework of how these games go. And they got it against a bad team. Now we're going to have to see, can they get it against a Ducks team who, you know, I don't think is great, but they're certainly they're an NHL team, unlike the one they played last night. So, and then the Kings, of course, are waiting around the corner, and I think they've had they look like they'll be a tough victory.
It's an interesting year when you get there and you say, geez, imagine if they had have lost this game. Well, the Sharks are about to come up on the Oilers' radar, I think, 2 games' time. Now, the Oilers have had just as bad a start as Pittsburgh have. I'll be very curious to see what happens after that Sharks game. Whether the Oilers season, like with the Penguins, is this the game where they, you know, get into some
Connor's
good habits?
Connor's got to go Lemieux on that and have like a 7-point game. I mean,
well, that would be the preference, yes. But with Pittsburgh, though, it's like, is this game is game 10, is it a turning point game where, as you said, the core of things are there. Looks like things are starting to get a little bit better. Is this a progress forward, or is this just a bad team, easy win, go back into the same mud and sluck that they've been in for the last couple of weeks. I'm really curious to see what turns around from this.
It's really as simple as do they win the next game or not? You can twist whatever
Correct.
narrative you want with it. They didn't beat a good team yesterday. They kicked the crap out of a borderline AHL team, which is they needed it. And it wasn't a small victory. Like they have to feel anytime you put 10 up in this league, like you gotta feel a little bit good about yourself.
Oh,
Everybody kind of
absolutely.
got in on the action. So confidence-wise, I think that's really good. They outplayed the Ducks last week, so it's not like they need to prove to themselves, can we play with this team? Well, yeah, you did it last week. You should have won. Maybe
Yeah,
don't give up a
correct.
breakaway after a 5-on-freaking-3. Or be in a situation where that's even a problem. Get a Ducks win, go into LA. If they beat the Ducks, the LA game, like let's say they have an overtime loss, like that would be palatable. Not ideal because they've thrown away too many points.
No, I
But
know
at
what you're
least at
saying.
that point, you're like, all right, we're starting to see a little bit more standings results. We're not getting goose egged.
They need to get above 500. And they can only get to 500 if they win the next two, right? So that's this West Coast trip, that's what they need to have come out of it, to be honest. Like, I would like to see this team make the playoffs. And I remember a quote from Gino earlier at the start of the year. Can't go burning points at this time of the year because you can't catch them up later on in the year. So they need to get above 500 early, and they probably need to be closer to 600 at 20 games. Now, that's a lot of wins in a row in the next 10 games to get that.
And I don't want to paint a little bad picture here, but you get Buffalo coming back from the West Coast, and I think Buffalo and them are pretty close into how they're structured these
Agree.
days. Got some real interesting high-end talent going on. Questions with goaltending a little bit because Levi has been kind of here and there and dinged up already. The Sabres can hurt you. Then you get Columbus. I mean, you can't drop that game. Please don't drop that game. But you want to hear the three games after that?
Yes, please.
Even with Jack Hughes out, New
Oh, no.
Jersey, Carolina, Vegas.
Right.
That is why losing to
That's.
Chicago, St. Louis, Ottawa was so problematic because then you get a three stretch like that.
Yeah.
Like you can't lose, sorry, you can't lose the Ducks game.
No, you're right. God, they've got a murderer's row kind of a run because, like, you've got New York, Buffalo, Toronto after the Vegas game as well.
There's the East is really good, so there's no hiding.
Well, yes. Yeah.
So they got to step up or step off, really.
Yeah. Hey, it's yeah. You do sit there and not expecting the Metro to have been an easy path forward. For me, it would have just been the Flyers and Columbus would have been the two teams that you go, all right, you should expect to win those games. Washington, you sort of get there and go, yeah, maybe a bit the same, but the other four teams in the division are challenges all the way through. So.
Yeah, it's they just gotta earn points. What else can you say? So that leaves the one variable that we kind of have touched on is the goaltending. And man, Tristan Jarry, I just don't have any confidence at all in that,
Yeah, I agree.
I don't want to sit here and just like bash him. But he really, he didn't deserve that contract, even though the market was what the market was. I half understand why he got it from the team, but that's $5 mil, and we can't even get save percentages that start with a 9 out of him on most nights.
Nope. It's either he's more Fleury than Fleury with his up and down. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and Fleury's best is amazing, but the gap between Gary's best and his worst.
I'll tell you what, though. Fleury, for, you know, all the criticisms and praise that has been levied on this podcast for him, he was durable.
Correct.
And still is. Has not been.
No, and that's probably your bigger risk with the length of the contract. Is say you do, like, ignore the fact that Nedeljkovic is injured. Say you lose him for a period of time. Like, that's the problem of throwing that amount of money into that one particular position, is it's really hard to replace a goalie once the season starts. If you're losing, like, look at Tampa, for example, with their situation in that Vasilevskiy being out for as long as he is, and they didn't find that out until just on top of the season. So,
well, sort of. I guarantee they had a pretty good idea.
You reckon they're doing it again?
No, I think he'll be back before, but I don't think it was one of those complete shocks to the
system. I don't know. I don't think it was a complete shock, but they still didn't have somebody lined up to that you would say is a regular. It's probably more my point. They were hopeful he was going to come out the other side.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's sort of more what I meant. But, yes, I struggle with Jerry. It's like, I remember you saying when Fleury got his contract after the 08 Cup run that they lost, and you're like, it was a couple of years later, and you've gone, you could totally understand why they gave him that contract at that point. His age, what he'd built up to by that point, the fact that if they'd won that cup in 08, he'd have got the Conn Smythe.
It makes sense. Yeah, he should have, yeah.
That contract, the amount and the length, it all made sense.
But we didn't. You're right about the people didn't know shit about goaltending then either.
True. No, absolutely true. But you look at Jarry and the knock I probably have on him as opposed to Fleury through that first contract was Fleury would generally win you games on his own.
Had the potential, right? Yeah.
Correct. Whereas Jerry doesn't, and I think one of the things that Fleury got bailed out with is that his team would often win games he would probably have lost because of the age of the stars that he played with, right? Those guys can't do that for Jerry as well as they used to anymore. And that's probably one thing that Jerry has going against him, is that this team just can't bail him out as much as the team used to be able to bail Fleury out. And that's no one's fault. That's just the reality of Father Time kicking in. But
he also needs to be better than 8.97. In regards to, can we get average? Because average might be good enough.
Yeah, absolutely agree. And Fleury would give you statistical average. Yeah, he wouldn't get there in an average manner. Whereas Jarry's not even at that point at the moment. Like, Nedeljkovic's freaking goals against is higher, but he's still got a 9.14 save percentage.
Well, his sample's nothing.
Tiny. I get it. It's quite, and he's literally out. Only two games. Yes, for which, quite is a while, terrifying. Which is
terrifying. I don't even know the name of the guy.
What's the actual injury?
Great question.
Yeah, I really wish this league would stop getting away with upper or lower. I really hate that.
Well, they love their gambling, clearly by the ads. You'd think that they would have to, you know, divulge such important information.
That's what, like, I every thought other too. Sport. I thought that would change. I really, really did.
So,
and the fact that it hasn't is just odd.
The other issue with Jarry that is out of his control, more coaching and a Dubas issue, is with Nedeljkovic out, the young man named Magnus Hellberg is up, and I just, given how the Penguins season has started, I can you see Mike Sullivan giving him any starts?
No, but I can see him playing a bit, because when Jarry's off, he's off early, and the Pens are down 2-0 in the first early.
Well, that may be the case for how he gets in, but he's not going to get a start.
No, and the whole point of having
the only one that makes sense is the Duck one, but that they need that game.
Yep, that's exactly right.
And I don't think Albert's like a celebrated prospect or anything.
No, and you're going to end up in a situation where Jarry's going to climb close to getting those 60 starts, and that's bad.
This is how little I know about Mr. Hellberg. He's not a celebrated prospect. Yeah, because does that say what I think it does? Yeah, he's 32 fucking years old. Maybe that's why.
Hey, he's in the system. He's a prospect until he's in the NHL, man.
He does have 24 career games. They just weren't in Pittsburgh. Predators, Rangers, Red Wings, Senators.
Senators, that's where I know the name from.
So, okay. And that was only one game, so you must have watched the one game.
Yeah. Bizarre how that works.
So, like, yeah. Like, Mike Sullivan ran Jarry into the ground when DeSmith was there. And part of that running into the ground led to the injuries. So we're right back where we were. That caused the problems, and that doesn't leave me in a good place with how things are in that situation.
No, I agree. I still want the Fleury swan song. I don't think I'm going to get it, though. So I keep trying, in my head, I keep trying to come up with ways of, well, we could just trade for him at the deadline, and he can just, you know,
but
have one good playoff round.
Like, they that's, don't yes, have any that's, money. Yes. Even no, if, no, like, that's you dropped yep. him for free.
No, 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 I don't. I get that. Like, that's the thing. That's why I sit there and I say it's like a pipe dream. I think about it and you go, well, that's not really going to happen. So just stop. Because you can't have – I think it's unfortunate for it's unfortunate for Dubas that Dorfovic got injured so early, because sure, the idea would have been to try and play them 55-45, not even a 60-40 split.
You could play him against the Sharks, that's for sure.
Correct. Yes, that's right. But as you said earlier on, it loops back to losing those earlier games that you shouldn't have lost. You can't get there in this situation now, throw Hellberg into the Sharks game to give Jarry a night off in a game that really, I bet you they would have booked in that he wasn't playing at the start of the year.
Oh, no, I wouldn't imagine so. But
no.
Here we are.
Yep.
Some other random stuff. Sidney Crosby, more and more, I'm going to lead with some criticism, and then I'm going to, which I don't normally, you don't hear Sid slander on this podcast that often.
No.
But I'll follow up with a compliment for him as well. Maybe it's me, maybe it's a personal bias, but I feel like more and more, there are a lot of forced passes that don't look like they got much of a chance of getting completed. And he's turning over way more pucks than I'm used to seeing. I mean, this is a guy I've watched pretty intently for, I don't know, 16, 17 years. So I feel like if I'm picking up on it, then it must be, you know, happening because... Yep. Like, am I crazy? Like, there's a lot of, like, flat-footed passes that he's just trying to muscle in that after it, you're like, Sid, what gives, man? What was that? And I that think... never happened, and that's a testament to just how damn good he is. That he's any being... little turnover, you're like, well, what the fuck was that? But I think you're seeing a little more and more of that, and he's 36, so, like, it makes sense. But that's not like a aging curve thing. Like, his hands are still perfectly fine, and his decision making shouldn't be impacted. So it's a little weird to just see those turnovers happen more often. That you're, it's a shock to the system when I see it. I just, It's not like it's all the time, don't get me wrong. It's just a change for him.
Yeah, no, no, you make a valid point. It's really funny, you know. I feel like Gino's been the best player on the team for the start of the season, and it just feels like there's a little bit of a swap in the power dynamic at the moment, where Gino's absolutely flying, right? And not making, you know, what you'd call traditional Gino errors and that kind of stuff, which is probably a little bit of what you just said about Sid. That's where Gino would usually get it burning himself.
Gino gets killed for that stuff.
I absolutely agree, right?
I'm not looking to kill Sid over it. I think the treatment of Gino is bullshit. So I'm not. I'm just pointing out something unusual is happening.
That's sort of my point, though, is that it feels like it's a little bit of a flip at the moment. Maybe Sid's just not feeling it. And because he's 700 million years old now, stuff like this happens a little more frequently to him.
So at least with these, it's like choices, and I don't for a second believe like his passing skills are shot or anything like that. So I think that might fix itself. The compliment that I want to follow up with, he looked, and mind you, the Sharks, he looked like he had some juice in his legs. He actually rushed the puck through the middle of the neutral zone and split the D and almost did one of his old school vintage Sid goals last night. And then a different shift had the Jets going. And that is an area of an aging curve that I'd be way more concerned about. And he looked good.
Yes. Yes, absolutely right. That was wonderful to see.
And that's encouraging.
A little flashbacky. Yeah.
I don't know, like, is that how bad the Sharks are? That Sid looks vintage? Can
possibly
he do that against the Hurricanes? I don't know.
Well, your argument would be probably no.
Well, they would probably have back pressure feeding him into the defenseman to step up on him, I would think. Something like that, but...
Yes.
All that said, I just think it was good to see that burst. I feel like with his age, of course, you play a little bit more conservative. He can't do the McDavid style anymore that he used to, which is totally reasonable. I'm not asking him to, but it was just nice to see. Like, then that's why last night was so enjoyable. There was something for everybody. Even though Sid only had the one assist, you still had that moment where you're like, oh yeah, Sid.
You're correct. That's exactly right. And that's the nice thing about it. And that's why I'm trying to watch. I'm downloading every game they play this year, literally so I can go back and watch these later on, because even in the bad games, you're going to get stuff like that crops up. And it's like, that stuff will be good to watch while running on the treadmill in a couple of years' time, so I don't have to think about the pain I'm going through.
Oh my God, these ESPN autoplay videos really piss me off. I'm trying to look up one last thing. Oh, yes, that's right. So I got a couple things to close out on, unless you got something else.
Nope.
So Carlson's up to 8 points in 10 games. And I think considering where the Penguins were underperforming their expected goals, I think Carlson's looked great. He's been everything I expected to be. I don't think he's underperforming by any stretch. I don't think he's overperforming, because I think 100 points wasn't very realistic.
No,
there's just too many players to spread the puck to on this Penguins team, where he really was like almost like if Michael Jordan in his prime was on a bad team, like you're just force feeding him the ball because nobody
else
can do it.
Absolutely right.
I do think he can be a point per game guy. 82 points for a defenseman would be outstanding. So I think you're going to start to see the tangible results pick up a little bit, and of course the power play that we talked about is going to help there. The other thing I wanted to mention before we go, we haven't talked really much about Ryan Graves, which is kind of fitting because my overall first impressions have been meh.
I'm okay with meh. Hang on. Do you mean meh as in he does his job well and he'd be?
No. I don't need him to be noticeable, okay. Like flashy. His underlying like expected goals for and stuff like that was pretty not great early on, but I will say that it's gotten better the last few games, so he's trending up a little bit, which is nice.
A direction you'd prefer to see, yeah.
You know, I was getting to the point where, like I mentioned, flipping Rust and Raquel, do you flip Pedersen and Graves to see if like it's just a Letang Graves issue kind of thing? Because it's a lot of term and a lot of money for a guy to not like.
Yeah. They have time in the year. Like, you know how it was like it took till game 10 for Carter to sit, right? I do wonder whether the coaching staff are looking at chunks of games together. If you're going to do the flip, now's a good time to flip it, to be honest. You've had 10. You've got a good enough sample as you're going to get for now for a season. It's probably not a bad idea, right?
So you might not have to, though. The last three games, expected goals for Ryan Graves, 81.51, 76.22, and 63.67. So we'll see if he puts strings together. Solid game against the Ducks and the Kings, then we're cooking with gas again.
Yeah. I just want this team to make the playoffs with a healthy goalie and a healthy roster. And just see what happens.
The points they've shed.
I know.
It's November, and in 20 days, teams who are in a playoff spot, it's something crazy, like 75% of them make the playoffs.
Yeah.
So this stretch is enormous.
Yep. Because you look at the... You sit there and say, oh, I don't think the Islanders are that good, but then Varlamov goes and... Yeah, anyway.
But, you know, I think it was nice to have that game after pretty bummer stretch. You know, a lot of optimism with Dubas coming in and making all the wholesale changes, Carlson, all that. And they kind of laid a dud to overall to start the year. So last night was fun. I hope they build off of that, take care of California, and come home and get ready for that gauntlet, because that's going to be something else.
I wonder if we look back at when we were at game 70 and we go that week after the West Coast trip, that was the season right there, because they go, you know, 0-3-1 and they get 1 point out of like four games or something like that. And we go, yeah, you kind of can't do that.
Yeah. So
this is a much more fun season to watch than last year, though.
Yeah, even with the losses, like I find myself like enjoying the games more.
Yeah, there's more. Last year really felt like the team was just spinning its wheels, right? Like it wasn't doing anything. This year, change of roster and all that kind of stuff. But there's stuff to talk about. There's stuff to think about with the team. It's not just, well, they can't do anything, they're kind of stuck, that's where they are.
Yeah. And that's kind of why you're listening to us right now. There's stuff to talk about. Like those Hextall years, I was really not invested in the team. I just saw nothing positive coming. The now was kind of whatever. And the loss to Chicago and Columbus was just the shit cherry on top of the shit sundae where they missed the playoffs. So, but, you know, even worst case scenario, top six, Carlson, Letang, they're all great players to watch. And most of them playing really well, especially my man Gino. which has made me so happy. I'm so happy that he's still churning out the caliber of play that he is, because just one of my absolute favorites of all time. So is there anything else that you wanted to cover?
No. I've got nothing else to add. It's just good to be able to do this. This is semi-regular, I suppose. This is episode 3 after about 6 weeks, so we're doing fortnightly, so I think we're doing okay.
Yeah. Probably catch us on the tail end of that gauntlet that we're talking about, most likely.
I would think so. I would hope so. That'll be a... Oh, shit, maybe not. I might be traveling. Oh, anyway, we'll work it out.
Okay. We will. We've been good so far this year, so...
I'd like to try and keep that habit. It's my point, more for myself.
Well, all right. Enjoy that 10-2 victory. Hope you listen to it before the Ducks game, you know, for good or bad. And we'll see if the Penguins can get these points. Very important for them to stay in the thick of this race. I think guys like Crosby, Malkin, Carlson, Letang, they deserve to have another playoff run. But they got to get there, and we'll see how this California trip shakes out. So much appreciated, as always, for listening to us, and we're both happy to be able to do it. So until the next time.
See you next time, guys.
See ya.